Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I'd like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that it is prom season, some proms have already started, some proms are yet to come, I thought we'd read a little essay, kind of funny essay, written by Mark Mayfield about proms and about dads and about daughters, and it's entitled, Prom is a Nightmare for Primal Dads. Mark writes, the words hit me like a ton of tuxedo-clad bricks. A boy asked me to the prom, said my daughter, an innocent junior girl in a world of predatory senior boys. The primal dad within me wanted to scream. Fortunately, the calm, understanding outer dad spoke up first. That's wonderful, I said with all the phony excitement I could muster. What's this young man's name? I sweetly inquired, knowing that restraining the primal dad within me would be impossible if she replied. His real name is Wolfgang, but his buddies from prison call him Reefer. But that's not what she said, and I must admit that the boy's real name sounded harmless enough. But isn't that what shocked neighbors always say after the well-behaved boy down the street commits a horrific crime? We just can't believe it, they say. Wolfgang always seemed harmless enough. Is he a nice boy? I asked, pleadingly, hoping she would reply, Oh, Dad, he's more than just a nice boy. He's the leader of his church's youth group. His recent essay entitled, Why I Agree with My Parents on the Importance of Abstinence, Sobriety, and Early Curfews, was published in several major newspapers and magazines. Oh, and he's also starting point guard on the varsity basketball team. But that's not what she said. She said, Yes, Dad, he's very nice. So, sweetheart, tell me all about what happens at a prom, I said nonchalantly. I was hoping she would reply. Well, everybody just stands around and discusses important global issues and listens to classical music. But that's not what she said. She said, Oh, everybody just dances and stuff. What will you wear at this big prom? I asked through clenched teeth, hoping she would reply. Well, I'll probably wear something that covers me from my toenails to my bottom lip, something that completely conceals all of the anatomical changes I've experienced since my 13th birthday. But that's not what she said. She said, I'll ask Mom to help me shop for a cute dress. Now, this was bad news because my wife, who isn't equipped with a primal mom within her, is too liberal in her dress-choosing duties. In fact, she openly condones clothing that exposes my daughter's chin. Several weeks after my daughter told me about her prom date, my wife and I gathered with other parents to participate in the pre-gala tradition of taking heartwarming pictures of elegantly attired teenagers, including disobedient daughters who shalt surely seeth lots of fatherly fury for knowingly violating the sacred showeth no neck commandment. The festivities progressed smoothly until a deranged middle-aged man suddenly lunged at my daughter's date, who had just violated the sacred seeth-no-neck commandment. The primal dad within me promptly apologized for the ugly incident and promised to behave himself for the rest of the evening. Prom is a nightmare for primal dads. Boy, if he had that much trouble before the prom, I can't imagine what it's like waiting up for him to get home. It's something everyone goes through. All dads go through it with their daughters, and I certainly did more than once. More than twice. More than three times. But what is the pram, actually? A little information about the brief history of the pram. Well, it's time for the prom, that one special night, usually in May, when girls in colorful gowns and boys in ill-fitting tuxedos pose awkwardly for photos that they will cherish or rue for the rest of their lives. The night when curfews are broken and limousines are taken for joyrides. The night when the punch bowl might contain more than just punch. The word prom is short for promenade, the formal introductory parading of guests at a party. The prom can be traced back to the simple co-ed banquets that 19th century American universities held for each year's graduating class. A growing teenage culture pushed proms younger and younger, and by the 1940s, the adolescent dance we know today had almost entirely taken hold. In the 50s, a thriving post-war economy allowed high schools to eschew the traditional gymnasium in favor of proms held in hotels or at country clubs. President Kennedy rescheduled a 1963 $1,000 a plate fundraiser at the Beverly Hilton to accommodate a local school whose prom had been booked for the same time. In 1975, President Ford's daughter Susan held her high school senior's prom at possibly the best prom location ever, the White House. As cultural mores have changed, so has the prom, begrudgingly. An Alabama principal was sued in 1994 for threatening to cancel the prom if interracial couples attended. And despite the two South Dakota boys who in 1979 became one of the first known same-sex couples to openly attend a prom, some schools still have anti-gay bans in place. In April, a Mississippi school district canceled its prom rather than allow a student to bring her girlfriend as her date. And while going stag was once social suicide, some kids now attend in groups rather than as couples. But don't worry. Between choosing the right outfit and attending the right after party, there's still more than enough anxiety to go around. Isn't that true? And I think it's not a bad idea that let the kids come in groups if that's the case. If they can't necessarily have a boyfriend or girlfriend to go with, and why not give them that opportunity? Because I think that they should be able to rather than not go at all. Free thing to do. Here's some other prom night thoughts. Remember the gentleman, Bruce Cameron, who wrote the book, Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. He has some thoughts on the prom also, which turned into a great television show. So if we have time a little later, we'll read a little bit about that. Well, this weekend, of course, the Crosstown Classic. And what better way to celebrate that than at Swirls? So Pam Rose, our good pal, has produced some White Sox cupcakes and some Chicago Cubs cupcakes. And of course, with the NATO summit in town, might make things a little bit more tricky, but Pam Rose has come up with an idea for that. The Crosstown Classic, White Sox at the Cubs, and free, no-hassle NATO delivery, whether you bleed Cubby Blue or are a diehard Southsider. Swirls has you covered for this weekend's rivalry showdown. Add edible white chocolate Cubs and Sox logo pieces to any cupcake order and show your pride for either side. Now, with your order of either 2 dozen regular-sized cupcakes or 60 mini cupcakes, Swirls will deliver for nothing. That's a great idea. Now, the boundaries are Irving Park in the north and Division in the south, Damon on the west, and Lakeshore Drive on the east. So within that area, give them a little time and a little window, and Pam will deliver those cupcakes to you. Great way to celebrate. Of course, Swirls Cupcakes is located at 705 West Belden. For information, 773-404-2253. Or log on to their website, swirlscupcakes.com. And why? Because Swirls Cupcakes make people happy. Isn't it true? Ask for Pam Rose. Mention us. And certainly she will look out for your best interests, without a doubt. We got the press release for the Paramount Theater, their second season. Of course, a great season this year. Chorus Line and Hair and My Fair Lady. Just a wonderful time in the theater at the Paramount. Next year, they're going to be presenting Grease, Annie, The Music Man, and Fiddler on the Roof. What four classics. Grease, a great classic musical, will be from September 12th through the 30th. Annie, November 21st through December 30th. The Music Man, Harold Hill. Remember Harold Hill, the traveling salesman? Stops in River City from January 16th through February 3rd. And finally, Fiddler on the Roof from March 6th to the 24th. Just four great musicals which will be presented at the Paramount Theater. Of course, Fiddler will be directed by our good pal Jim Cordy, who will undoubtedly be on a show so we can talk about it, but it should be a lot of fun. As you're driving down Lakeshore Drive, of course, you're going to see a lot of people out and about for the NATO Summit, but mostly on Lakeshore Drive, you're going to see Buckingham Fountain officially has opened for its 85th season. The Clarence Buckingham Memorial Fountain in Grant Park celebrates its 85th season of dazzling Chicagoans and visitors alike with its beauty along the lakefront. The fountain operates daily from 8 to 11, now through autumn, weather dependent. Times are subject to change when special events take place in or around Grant Park. Each year, the opening of Buckingham Fountain has signified to all Chicagoans that the summer season is upon us, said Chicago Park District General Superintendent and CEO Mike Kelly. This iconic fountain represents Chicago's rich history and the many traditions that generations of residents, their families, and visitors have enjoyed for decades. During the season, the fountain produces a major display shooting water from the center jet 150 feet into the air. The daily display begins at 9 a.m. and thereafter it is every hour on the hour. Beginning at dusk, the fountain's major display is accompanied by a 20-minute light and music show every hour on the hour. An additional and final display of the evening begins at 10:35. A gift to the people of Chicago from Miss Kate Buckingham is a memorial to her brother Clarence. The fountain is often considered the most identifiable landmark in the city. Dedicated on August 26th, 1927, the fountain was built at a cost of $750,000 and has since become a favorite backdrop for tourist snapshots, wedding photographers, filmmakers, and promgoers. Edward H. Bennett designed the fountain to represent Lake Michigan with four seahorses, built by Marcel Luau, to symbolize the four states that touch the lake: Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. Bennett attributed the design specifically to the influence of Latona Basin in Louis XIV's gardens at Versailles. The fountain is constructed of Georgia pink marble with a water capacity of 1.5 million gallons. Depending on wind conditions, major displays use approximately 14,000 gallons of water per minute conveyed through 134 jets. Water is recirculated from the base pool after the basins are filled and not drawn from the outside except to replace losses from wind and evaporation. So that's interesting. It's all recycled water. Well, of course, it's windy out and you lose a little bit of that water through the wind. But something always enjoyable to look. Every hour there's a display, and certainly something you'd very much enjoy to see. Everybody wants to have their picture taken in front of the fountain. Well, rightfully so, because it's one of our favorite landmarks in Chicago, next to Navy Pier, which is the most visited, and even more so not that there's going to be some remodeling down there. A lot of places to go as we start our summer season. Of course, next week is Memorial Day. In the newspaper, we're number three. Here's something to chew on when it comes to fun. We're number three. That's right. Chicago is more fun than San Francisco and Dallas. I know it's more fun than Dallas. And a better time than Los Angeles and Boston, according to a study of fun commissioned by a chewing gun company. Atlanta, of all places, topped New York City as the country's fun capital, the Trident-sponsored survey says. Atlanta? Random folks in big cities were asked how many days a week they had fun and how expensive it is to have fun in their town, among other things. The survey found Chicagoans, 91% of Chicago folks surveyed, consider themselves fun people. I just hope they didn't talk to the same person more than once. That's more than any other city in the top 10. So, America's top 10 fun towns from 10 to number 1. Philadelphia, number 10. Houston. Boston, number 8. Washington, D.C. Los Angeles, number 6. Dallas, number 5. No, I don't think so. San Francisco, number 4, Chicago, number 3, New York, number 2, and Atlanta, number 1. I don't know. San Francisco's always great. Chicago's the best, without a doubt. Well, we have a fun show today. Certainly a little cultural and theatrical stimulation. We'll be talking to two very accomplished actors in some productions here in Chicago. And certainly each of them have a very impressive resume. But I thought we'd play a little music. from Henry Mancini's CD Classic Movie Love Songs. Of course, this is a great song written by Michel Legrand, an Oscar winner. And it was from his movie The Summer of 42. Robert Mulligan directed and wrote it. Set on Cape Cod during World War II, evoking the pain, the confusion, and memory of a young man's coming of age and his first love. So from Summer of 42, the classic, Michel Legrand's The Summer Knows. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. From The Summer of 42, Michel Legrand's The Summer Knows. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Northlight Theater, under the direction of Artistic Director B.J. Jones and Executive Director Timmy Evans, presents Title of Show with music and lyric by Jeff Bowen and the book by Hunter Bell, directed by Peter Amster. The production runs through June 10th at Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. Jeff and Hunter, two struggling writers, hear about a new musical theater festival. However, the deadline for submissions is a mere 3 weeks away. With nothing to lose, the pair decides to try to create something new with the help of their friend Susan, Heidi, and Larry on the 88s. With the cast in place, Jeff and Hunter begin a conversation about what to write about. Eventually, Jeff suggests they write about what to write about. They make a pact to write up until the festival's deadline and dream about the show changing their lives. Title of Show, taken from the space on the festival's application form, which asks for the title of show, in brackets, follows Hunter and Jeff and their friends on their journey through the gauntlet of creative self-expression. In the span of 90 minutes, they write and perform their show at the festival and learn lessons about themselves as people, friends, and artists. title of the show is, above all, a love letter to the musical theater, a uniquely American art form, and to the joy of collaboration. The musical received a Tony Award nomination for Best Book of a Musical in 2009. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning stage actor, having been seen on Broadway in Spamalot, off-Broadway in Take Me Along, and in the touring production of Tommy Toon's Dr. Dolittle, local Chicago favorite who has performed at Drury Lane, Marriott, and Chicago Shakespeare Theaters, instructor at our good friend Nan Giordano's Dance School, proud graduate of the Chicago College of the Performing Arts at Roosevelt University, and now starring in title of show at Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, through June 10th, Mr. Matthew Kroll. Matthew, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Congratulations on the fun success you're having with title of show.
Oh, yeah. We're having a ball. Every night's a party. We get up there and we just we goof around for an hour and 40 minutes and make ourselves laugh and make everybody else laugh, and it's just a laugh riot. Very happy to be part of this show.
You've been on some great plays, Spamalot, Take Me Along, Dr. Lulu, all laugh riots themselves. Is that something you gravitate to?
Whether I know it or not, I guess it is. That's where I end up going, yeah. And I've been very lucky and very fortunate to work with in such fun and fast-paced comedies, for sure. I always have a great time and meet really funny people.
You know, we were talking a little earlier. Of course, you're a graduate of the Chicago College of the Performing Arts at Roosevelt University, on which I proudly serve on the board, and certainly exposed to a lot of great people, Jim Gondry, Joel Fink, and so forth. You're from a small town in Michigan. What made you come to Chicago? You wanted to get to the big city?
Yeah, you know, I always we grew up about 3 miles from Chicago in southwest Michigan, and we would come to Chicago regularly as a family because it was something we could do, and it wasn't nearly as expensive as going to Disney World. And I just kind of became very, very fond of the city. And when I was getting to be, you know, an age where I started going to colleges, I really wanted to study in Chicago, and my parents were always so supportive, and they said, "Look, it's find a place and get in, and you know, get enough scholarships, then we'll see what we can work out." And they always were. They were always supportive, and I stumbled upon Roosevelt one time. We were in town just by walking by, and I thought, I don't know why, there was a light that went off, and I said, "That's the place. This is where I'm going to be." And it, lo and behold, it's where I went, and I met wonderful people. I had great experiences, not least of which was my mentor, Bruce Curl, who no longer works there, but he was very, very highly influential in everything I've done since.
Well, it's interesting, the great actors and actresses that the Roosevelt University has turned out, yourself, of course, being part of that group, and have had great success on Broadway, off Broadway, throughout the United States, whether in the School of Acting or in the music school also.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, what was wild was there was a time when I was doing Spamalot on Broadway in New York, and they brought in a new leading lady, Merle Dandridge, and she just happened to be cruising through the playbill, and she saw that I'd graduated from Roosevelt, and she had actually gone there years before I went there. And she's quite successful. I mean, she has a TV career now, and she popped up on 24. You'll see her all over the place. She's amazing, and you know, and another very successful Roosevelt graduate.
Now, of course, Spamalot must be a lot. It was Mike Nichols directed that, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yeah. And if you want, I mean, just rehearsing with him for a day was like a masterclass.
Was
it? He was something else. And, I mean, in an afternoon, he had enough material, I could write a book and make money on it. He always had the perfect way of saying something with, you know, some bizarrely hilarious twist. You know, and to get, there were days where I'd be downtown in Times Square and at the theater and just thinking, I cannot believe I'm sitting in a room with Mike Nichols and he's telling me how to be funnier, you know?
Well, Matt, that has to be something. Sitting there talking with Mike Nichols, you walk outside and you're in the middle of Times Square. That's pretty impressive, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely surreal. I'll never forget those days. Some of the best I've ever had.
And, of course, Tommy Toon's not somebody to sniff at, too, either. He's quite a – and you're a quite accomplished dancer yourself, a tap dancer.
I've studied that for about 20 years. I've been an avid student and now instructor. I've always loved tap. I started in ballet when I was 5, but And I studied it all until I was 18, and then I just kind of focused more on tap, and that's kind of been what's gotten me a lot of jobs.
And, of course, you work with our good friend Nan Giordano, Giordano Jazz Dance Chicago.
Absolutely, yeah. I've been working there for about, I've had to take some breaks for shows here and there, but I've been there for the better part of a year now. Great studio. They got a new studio in Andersonville.
Right. Now, is that an art that still people participate in, tap dancing? Is that still very popular?
I think it always has had a following. I think it's experiencing sort of a new recognized popularity. I think people have suddenly, just maybe in the past 10 years, I think that there's been this new breath of life and interest. I think you're going to be seeing a lot more tap shows. I see there being a turn there.
You know, I remember,
great because it's such a fascinating, entertaining art form.
You know, I think of a guy like Sammy Davis Jr., who was a great tap dancer, and then what was that other African American gentleman? He passed away. He was a great tap dancer. He was in a couple movies, but you know, it's something that you don't see a lot of, but you almost see a regeneration happening of it.
Yeah, definitely. In New York, there's no shortage of tap instructors, but I did notice that there aren't a lot offered when I moved back here from New York, and it's always been something that I really, really wanted to try and instruct. I studied really intensively all the years I was in New York, and so I've sort of tried to bring the style that I learned from my mentor over there, Ray Hesselink, who's a genius tap teacher and choreographer, and trying to infuse that into the dance scene here in Chicago, and it's been going quite well. In fact, I taught for a semester back at my alma mater, Roosevelt University.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so, you know, quite a cycle.
You know, it's an interesting gentleman who runs the dance program, Louis Perez, very accomplished.
In fact, he was the one who hired me. Lovely guy, a lot of great ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And fascinating career.
Yeah, he was just in a chorus line out at... Just in chorus line out at Paramount, but he's got some, like you say, he's got some great ideas. I hope we can fund him. That's the only thing we have to do. Well, tell us a little bit about the musical title of show.
Oh boy, it's got to be one of my very favorite shows I've ever been a part of. It's a beautiful, fast paced story about two writers who decide, kind of on a whim, that they're going to write this play, and you know, I'm sure that it's obviously beefed up a little bit for dramatic effect, but most everything that happens in the show is based on something, or is actually something that happens to two real writers who are actually named Hunter and Jeff, and it takes you through the course of the 3 weeks that they write this show, and you know, the hiccups here and there, and the excitement, and the fear, and always, it'll be always the underlying love for what they do, and that's what I think this show gets at very successfully and sharply, is what all sort of artists who always dream about doing something that they'll be remembered for, or that they'll be proud of when they look back. And this show, I think, really nails in a very quirky way kind of that whole goal of an artist and what it is to sort of struggle and always persevere and let yourself be scared and never stop loving what you do. These guys, they write this show. It ends up being way more successful than they expected. It gets interest from these producers. It suddenly is shot onto the Vineyard stage. And then 10 months after it closes off Broadway, they think they've kind of run their course. And my character, Hunter, decides that there's got to be a way that they can get their show on Broadway. And lo and behold, thanks to the brilliant technology that is YouTube, they actually did end up just kind of putting out these podcasts, podcasts and video blogs that they're going to Broadway. And it's sort of like, it's like a modern day The Secret. They just kind of got themselves out there. And the producer saw these clips and said, you know what? I'm going to produce this on Broadway. And they had quite a fun, I think, a three-month ride on Broadway. So when some shows close after a couple of weeks, this is basically like a Seinfeld the musical. For that to last 3 months is definitely not nothing.
Well, and they've written another show now called Now Hear This, which is back at the Vineyard Theater in New York, and it's been a success.
Yeah, it was a wild success. I don't know if it's running, but I know that it was extended multiple times. To tell you the truth, I have no idea what that one was about. but the real-life Hunter and Jeff are going to be coming to see our show.
Oh, really?
This weekend.
So oh, that's cool.
We'll get a chance to ask them. What the heck was that one about?
I'm going to read a little something from one of our critics in Chicago. She says, the travails of Hunter and Jeff, Matthew Kroll and Stephen Schellar, two nobodies in New York, as they struggle against overwhelming odds to get their little show produced without special effects, stunt casting, a budget, dumbing it down, and is emblematic of the struggle of underdogs and impractical dreamers everywhere. You're rooting for them before they get the first song under control. As for Kroll and Schellar, they play off each other with the ease and timing of a longtime comedy team, the crucial difference being their interaction never feels like shtick. And that's very complimentary, given the fact this is the first play you guys have done together. Yet you make it seem so fluid and effortless.
Yeah, there was some chemistry from the day. I didn't know Stephen until the day we started rehearsals, but he was just one of it was one of those cosmic coming together where we just knew instantly that this was going to be a lot of fun, and we did. We hit it off from day one. He's hilarious. He is so sharply funny and smart and brilliant on stage. He's got such great timing, and beyond that, he's a lovely guy, and he's such a trustworthy partner. So, you know, and it's doing a show like this, you're so vulnerable, and you don't know if you're funny or not in some of these scenes, but the last thing you want to do is play for the laughs, and that was something that I learned from Mike Nichols all those years ago in New York, and Stephen embodies that quality beautifully, where it's all about the truth of the scene and staying genuine, and, you know, The show is funny, so we don't have to worry about the audience understanding, you know, when it's funny and when it's not. It's very smartly written, and to get to have a scene partner like Stephen makes this one of the greatest experiences I've ever had performing.
Well, the audiences certainly love it. Northlight Theater aspires to promote change of perspective and encourage compassion by exploring the depth of our humanity across a bold spectrum of theatrical experiences, reflecting our community to the world and the world to our community. Now in its 37th season, the organization has mounted nearly 190 productions, including over 40 world premieres. Northlight has earned 151 Joseph Jefferson Award nominations and 28 awards. As one of the area's premier theater companies, Northlight is a regional magnet for critical and professional acclaim, as well as talent of the highest quality. Title of show is as authentic a glimpse of the journey as you are likely to find about the creation of the modern musical. Jeff Bowen and Hunter Bell chronicle their struggle to bring a show to life and to get it into one of the many showcases held in New York every year, with the ultimate goal of getting the show to Broadway. In the case of Title of Show, it did get to Broadway, a Cinderella story come true. Funny and true, it is a real eye-opener for lovers of musical theater who root for the little guy and who believe that perseverance and talent will win the day, comments B.J. Jones, the artistic director of Northlight Theater. Northlight Theater, under the direction of artistic director B.J. Jones and executive director Tim Evans, presents Title of Show with music and lyrics by Jeff Bowen and the book by Hunter Bell, directed by Peter Amster. The production runs through June 10th at Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, on the line with us right now. One of the stars of Title of Show, Matthew Kroll, and certainly a proud graduate of Chicago College of the Performing Arts. Matt, I'm going to give a phone number for the theater, 847-673-6300. Congratulations on your success, and certainly carry on the legacy of CCPA. And, everybody's going to come out and have fun.
Well, I so appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today.
It's been a pleasure. You take care, man.
You do the same. Thanks.
Matthew Kroll from the Northlight Theater's production of Title of Show does a great job. And we're very proud of that young man from Roosevelt University, doing a terrific job over at Northlight Theater. And again, for information, 847-673-6300. Well, we'll get back to Henry Mancini's CD Classic Movie Love Songs from Stanley Donen's film Charade, starring Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn. The great music of Charade. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Thank you. Henry Mancini's classic Charade. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Freud's Last Session, the runaway hit play by Marc St. Germain, now in its second successful year in New York, is now in session at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport, through July 15th. Freud's Last Session won the 2011 Off-Broadway Alliance Award for Best Play. The Off-Broadway premiere engagement of Freud's Last Session opened on July 22nd, 2010, to rave reviews and immediately became a sellout sensation. Freud's Last Session centers on legendary psychoanalyst Dr. Sigmund Freud, who invites the rising academic star C.S. Lewis to his home in London. Lewis, expecting to be called on the carpet for satirizing Freud in a recent book, soon realizes Freud has a much more significant agenda. On the day England enters World War II, Freud and Lewis clash on the existence of God, love, sex, and the meaning of life, only 2 weeks before Freud chooses to take his own. Not just a powerful debate, this is a profound and deeply touching play about two men who boldly address the greatest questions of all time. Marc St. Germain's celebrated new play was suggested by the best-selling book The Question of God by Dr. Armin Nicolai, professor of psychology at Harvard University. On the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, having appeared at Steppenwolf, Theater Wit, The Goodman, and Writers' Theater. Film actor seen in What Women Want with Mel Gibson, Shelter, and in the upcoming Man of Steel. Television performer who has been in The Chicago Code and The Beast, accomplished playwright and a founding and ensemble member of the Shawnee Theater Company. Now starring as C.S. Lewis in the hit play Freud's Last Session at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport. Mr. Kobe Goss. Kobe, welcome to The Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, it's great to have you, and gosh, congratulations on the great success this Freud's Last Session has been, because I'll tell you what, it's a powerful, powerful play, and you do a terrific job. Both you and Mr. Nussbaum do a terrific job.
Thank you very much.
Very interesting play, very serious play, of course. Here we have Freud, who is 83 years old, just weeks before his suicide, either in the middle of the London Blitz, and C.S. Lewis is a man half his age, a converted Christian. Lewis is the embodiment of optimism, and Freud is a crotchety old fatalistic type of guy.
The original odd couple.
Isn't that the truth? And they come together here, but you see, and maybe it's just the relationship you two have, but you see there's a connection there somewhere, Kobe.
Yes, definitely, and that's why I think the play is so being so well received. At the core of this is a deep respect between these two men, and that was important, I think, with the playwrights. That's really what he wanted to convey here, even more so than the religious debate, that these two men do respect each other.
You know, it's been around since 2010. It's surprising that it has lasted that long. It has the legs that it has. But, again, it's been received in such a way by a great many people. We had Carolyn Rossi Copeland, one of the producers, on our show a few weeks ago talking about it. And they love it in New York, and now we're loving it in Chicago.
Right, right. Now, I don't think I've ever been in a play that has been this well received by the audience every night, and I will say I've had friends come to see it who are religious and those who are atheist, and everyone loves it.
You know, I think the purpose, you know as well as anyone, the purpose of theater or going to the theater is to stimulate and engage one's imagination, or stimulate and engage one's intellect, or stimulate and engage one's creativity. And certainly, when you walk into this theater and you walk out, it's been done to you, and you feel smarter than you were when you walked in.
Good. I'm glad.
And, you know, you're working with an icon, Mr. Nussbaum, Mike Nussbaum, one of the great Chicago actors, one of the great actors of all time.
Right, right. No, that when I found out that he was playing Freud, that sealed the deal for me. I absolutely had to do it.
Are you learning from him, too?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He and I have a little talk before every show, and if I've got any section of the play that I'm still trying to work out, all I have to do is ask Mike. And he'll be able to give. He's very intuitive. He can give me, you know, a very brief idea of what to think about, and he's usually always right.
You know, as I said before, I was educated by the Jesuits, so I'm kind of leaning towards that Christianity side of C.S. Lewis. But very frankly, I think that the end of the show, and I'm sure there are people who disagree with me, and I'm sure there have been. I'm kind of leaning towards C.S. Lewis having the more strong argument, and I almost get the feeling that maybe Sigmund Freud, whether it's because he's in his final days, is starting to think along those lines too.
I will say that depending on what you go into the theater with, that's usually how you walk out.
Mm-hmm.
My atheist friends thought that Freud more or less won the argument.
Uh-huh.
I think that is a testament to the play.
Now, could you, as the character C.S. Lewis, have gone after Sigmund Freud a little stronger?
I feel as though I go after him as strong as the script asks.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the one thing to remember that I have to remember is that here's a man who's clearly dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my Lewis has to always remember that. I think there are times when the debate gets pretty fiery, and then Lewis has to step back and remember what's most important here is that there's a man dying in front of me.
Of course, Coey, some of the argument you put forth with him regarding that fact that he is dying, and then he starts to talk a little bit about suicide and taking his own life and so forth, and how it relates to his daughter, Anna, and the people who he's affected through his life. I get the feeling he's thinking about that a little bit. He might not have been done that before he talked with you.
Thinking about suicide?
Well, thinking about rethinking the idea about suicide.
Oh, right. No, I think that's definitely what Lewis thinks, that he's been brought here above all else to give him a compelling reason not to kill himself.
Had you done some research about C.S. Lewis prior to taking this role?
I had read some C.S. Lewis in the past. I did not read a lot to research for the role because I felt when I read the script that the playwright had done such an amazing job of painting this character that I didn't need to do too much. But the things that I did read recently I found very helpful. One of the things that I found most helpful was that when he gained his fame with the Narnia books, children all over the world would write him letters. And he took the time to write each one back.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. But now, again, this is historical fiction. This took place before he wrote the Screwtape Letters or the Chronicles of Narnia or the Lion, the Witch, and the Lorbo.
In this play, he has not gained any of his fame yet.
And he has been he was converted at 33, so he's just kind of come into his Christian kind of background. Right. Right. How do you feel as you go into the play each evening, Coby? Do you take something into it new, or do you take something out of it new, or do you kind of tweak it? Is it a dynamic? Is it a work in progress? Do you change it at all?
And you know, for Mike and I, it's really still pretty new, and that's still very exciting. We're finding new things every night. So yes, that's the answer to your question is yes.
You know, you have a venue there at the Mercury Theater. Of course, our good pal Walter Stearns does a terrific job. But that's the perfect venue for a play like that because it's so intimate. We feel like we're in the office of Freud as you and Freud are interacting.
The intimacy of that space, yes, absolutely. It's gorgeous.
Of course, you're a member of the Shawnakie Theater Company, a great Chicago theater company. As I said before, you make sure somebody gives me a call so we can talk a little bit more about it. But you have certainly produced and put on a lot of great theater. Tell us a little bit about Shawnakie.
Well, first of all, thank you. Shawnakie was started about 16 or 17 years ago by a group of actors who were putting on a play called And Neither Thy Wings to Fly that was written by Ann Noble. And the play was a big hit. It ran for 8-9 months. And we all decided that, hey, we work well together, so let's start a company, which we did. And we've really focused mostly in those years on Irish work. And we're still going strong. We're currently producing out of the Irish American Heritage Center.
And let's make sure we define what Shawnakie means. It's a Gaelic term meaning storyteller.
Storyteller, yes.
And you're telling a lot of stories there.
Right, right. That's the plan.
What is the future coming up for Shawnakie?
We are about to announce our new season, so I can't really say what.
Okay. Well, when you announce it, make sure you can call us here so we can do the same. And it focuses on serious works of drama.
Shawnakie. Yeah. Well, you know, we try to do a mix of comedy and drama, but in the last couple of years, we've been doing a lot of Irish classics.
Mm-hmm.
But in this coming year, we're going to try to focus a little bit more on some new Irish work.
Well, always enough Irish drama in Chicago because there's a lot of people that certainly follow that.
Absolutely.
A great evening in the theater, Freud's Last Session. I thank you for sharing your talents, and please give our best to Mr. Nussbaum, because what a great job he always does. Freud's Last Session, written by Mark St. Germain, explores the conversation that might have passed between founder of psychoanalysis, Dr. Sigmund Freud, and prolific author C.S. Lewis, had they met near the end of Freud's life, although it deals seriously with many heavy issues such as God, religion, death, sex, and happiness. The play tends toward the lighthearted in its lively banter between Lewis and Freud. The play is set in the most urgent of settings, just a few scant weeks before Freud's suicide after his long struggle with oral cancer, and right in the midst of World War II, just a year before the London Blitz. The two men knew that at any moment the Germans could bomb them or drop poison gas, and every cough of Freud's could herald the end of his life. However, they still managed to joke around and tease each other between the air raid sirens, radio announcements, and Freud's bouts of coughing. Freud's Last Session, the runaway hit play by Mark St. Germain, now in its second successful year in New York, is now in session at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport, through July 15th. Freud's Last Session won the 2011 Off-Broadway Alliance Award for Best Play. And online with us right now is the gentleman who portrays C.S. Lewis, Mr. Kobe Goss. Kobe, again, I thank you for taking a little time. I'm going to give the phone number of the theater, 773-325-1700. And I'm going to insist upon getting me some information about Shaughnessy so we can get the word out about that and continue the great success at the Mercury Theater. Everybody's having a great time.
Well, thanks, Kevin. Happy to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Kobe.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Kobe Goss does a terrific job as C.S. Lewis in Freud's Last Session at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport. And again, for information, 773-325-1700. What I have to remind everybody, too, is that in my web site designer mentioned this to me, is if you ever want to listen to the show or re-listen to the show, of course, we archive all our shows on my website, which is kevinmoorepresents.com, www.kevinmoorepresents.com. And you can hear all the interviews we've had with the great people. You can take it off and give a little background about what we do and some of the people we've had on the show. And certainly it's always a work in progress trying to update the website with some of the things that we've been talking about. But please, at your convenience, do that. KevinMoorePresents.com. As I had mentioned, if we had time, I'd like to read this little essay by Bruce Cameron about prom night. He entitles it, "It's Hard to Tell Who's Most Nervous on Prom Night." And Bruce writes, "Though my daughter's prom was several weeks ago, I'm still feeling the effects. That's because on prom night, fathers don't sleep but spend long hours gazing out the window at the driveway, attempting by sheer force of will to cause a limo to materialize and return his child to the safety of his own house. In the movie about prom night, Cinderella, the daughter races home in time to meet curfew, but in real life, the kids don't remember they even have a home. Prom is a sort of a trial run for a wedding, complete with dreaded tuxedos, a dress that can never be worn anywhere else, and sobbing mothers. As with weddings, fathers are expected not to understand, but merely to pay for everything. The panic starts early Saturday morning with all the women in the house bustling from room to room, slamming dresser drawers. A bemused father, standing in the middle of all this frenetic activity, might wonder why it's necessary to fling themselves into a furor so early, when all his daughter is doing is getting dressed. Doesn't she get dressed every day? Since when does it take 12 hours? You'll settle down with a newspaper and try to avoid the mounting hysteria. But when your wife discovers you're not hyperventilating, she'll do her best to try to infect you with PPSS, which is pre-prom stress syndrome. Mother, we can't get that hair right. Father, what do you mean? I thought all you did was pile it on top of her head like Mount Vesuvius. Mother, I need you to buy a hair comb. Make sure it's hand-carved by an ancient Chinese craftsman and costs at least $100. Father, I don't think ancient Chinese craftsmen work on Saturdays. Mother, just go. This is an emergency. So you set out what will be the first of many emergency trips to the store. Luckily, there's an aisle called Emergency Items You've Never Purchased Before. So you can find pantyhose. You bought charcoal. I said charcoal mist. Go back. Eye goop, ear scrub, and hair gel. You got maximum hold. I said ultra hold. Go back. At some point, the focus turns to applying makeup. I said midnight serenade mascara. You bought midnight song. Go back. A process only slightly less complicated than a liver transplant. Everyone leans in and peers at your daughter's face, applying bits of color one pore at a time. like the restoring the Mona Lisa. When she's done, she'll come to see you, beaming. A word to the wise. When your daughter asks you how she looks, never say, fine. If you say, fine, she'll burst into tears. Use words like breathtaking or extraordinary. She looks all grown up, your wife will gush. Well, yeah, but when did you say you wanted her to look all grown up? Weren't things a lot easier when all she would wear was a Winnie the Pooh t-shirt? Eventually, her date shows up, and the cameras sprout like tulips. If prom night didn't exist, Kodak would have to invent it. Your daughter and her escort seem to feel awkward around each other, which you don't think is a bad thing at all. You wonder whether you can exploit the moment by suggesting they go in separate cars. When the limo pulls up, everyone hugs as if your daughter is going off on her honeymoon, though you're using your best fatherly frown to silently communicate to her date that nothing could be further from the truth. Phone every half hour, you call as they leave. Everyone laughs as if you just told a joke. Exhausted from the day's preparation, your wife slides into easy sleep. But not you. It's not even 10 o'clock. You have a whole night of pacing ahead of you. Remember, it's prom night. It's hard to tell who's most nervous on prom night. By Bruce Cameron, who of course wrote 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. Don't want to forget to mention the Laura Freeman show, It's My Party, the girls and the groups of the early 60s at Davenport's Piano Bar on the 19th and the 26th at 8 o'clock, 1383 North Milwaukee. Martha and the Vandellas in 1964 and Connie Francis, the top female vocalist of the 50s. Those are the bookends. When we talk about music from the 60s, most people think of Bob Dylan, the Beatles, and Jimi Hendrix, but that is really just part of the story. That small window of about 8 years changed music forever with the birth of a genre most historians don't even acknowledge. The birth of bubblegum pop. Suddenly the airwaves were jumping with the sound of women. No girls, teenage girls and their teenage girls' problems. Join Laura Freeman as she celebrates the sounds of the Vandellas, the Marvelettes, the Supremes, the Ronettes, Dion, Dusty, Leslie, Mary, and more. Of course, again, that's at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee, at 8 o'clock on May 19th and May 26th. And for information, 773-278-1830. Of course, Laura is a great part of the ensemble of Kevin Moore Presents, and she does a terrific job. Sometimes I wonder how she remembers all the lyrics, but she'll have a great show, and certainly she's had a couple of them already performed on May 12th, but terrific job. And she's been on the show a couple weeks ago talking about it. But if you have the chance, get down to Davenport's at 8 o'clock on the 19th and the 26th. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially, I thank Matthew Kroll, of course, a proud graduate of the Chicago College of the Performing Arts at Roosevelt University, now starring in Title of Show at Northlight Theater, 9501 Skokie Boulevard, through June 10th. That's, of course, the theater in the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. For information, 847-673-6300. Certainly thank our good friend Kathy Taylor for setting up our conversation with Matthew Kroll. And Coburn Goss, Kobe Goss, a very talented Chicago actor, also with the Shawnee Theater Company. He's portraying C.S. Lewis in the hit play Freud's Last Session at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport, with the very iconic and talented Mr. Mike Nussbaum. For information, 773-325-1700. Said before, leave the theater a little different than when you walked in, because it does intellectually stimulate your creativity and your imagination. Certainly a great time in the theater. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
Year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music.
Gracias.